एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् स आस्थाय परात्मनिष्ठा मध्यासिताम् पूर्वतमैर्महर्षिभिः अहम् तरिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दाङ्घ्रिनिषेवयैव एताम् दिस् सह सच आस्थाय बिकमिंग कंप्लीटली फिक्स्ड इन पर आत्मनिष्ठाम डिवोशन टू द सुप्रीम पर्सन कृष्ण अध्यासिताम वर्शिप्ड पूर्वतमैहि बाय प्रीवियस महर्षिभिः आचार्यस् अहम् आय तरिष्यामि शल क्रॉस ओवर दुरंतपारम द इनसरमाउंटेबल तमः द ओशन ऑफ नेशंस मुकुंद अंघ्री ऑफ द लोटस फीट ऑफ मुकुंद निवेशवा निषेवया बाय वर्शिप एव सर्टनली ट्रांसलेशन by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And the purport is actually by Srila Prabhupada. So when you come to the purport, we'll come to know. I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nations by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in the firm devotion to the Lord, Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. This verse is quoted by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrut, Madhya Leela 3.6. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. And then the entire purport is actually reproduced here from Chaitanya Charitamrut 3.6. So very nice purport, we'll read it. This verse is quoted by, Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. In connection with this verse, which is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.23.57, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that of the 64 items required for rendering devotional service, acceptance of the symbolic marks of sannyas is a regulative principle. If one accepts the sannyas order, his main business is to devote his life completely to the service of Mukunda, Krishna. If one does not completely devote his mind and body to the service of the Lord, he does not actually become a sannyasi. It is not simply a matter of changing dress. In Bhagavad Gita 6.1, it is also stated, Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karoti yah sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. One who works devotedly for the satisfaction of Krishna is a sannyasi. The dress is not a sannyas, but the attitude of service to Krishna is. The word Paratma Nishtha means being a devotee of Lord Krishna. Paratma, the Supreme Person, is Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Those who are completely dedicated to the lotus feet of Krishna in service are actually sannyasis. As a matter of formality, the devotee accepts the sannyas dress as previous acharyas did. He also accepts the three dandas. Later, Vishnu Swami considered that accepting the dress of a tridandi was paratmanishtha. Therefore, sincere devotees add another danda, the jiva danda, to the three existing dandas. The Vaishnava sannyasi is known as a tridandi sannyasi. The Mayavadi sannyasi accepts only one danda, not understanding the purpose of tridanda. Later, many persons in the community of Shiva Swami gave up the Atmanishtha, devotional service of the Lord, and followed the path of Shankaracharya. Instead of accepting 108 names, those in the Shiva Swami Sampradaya follow the path of Shankaracharya and accept the 10 names of sannyas. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the then existing order of sannyas, namely Ekadanda, he still recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam about the Tridanda sannyas accepted by the Brahmana of Avantipur. Indirectly, he declared that within that Ekadanda, four dandas existed as one. Accepting Ekadanda sannyas without Paratmanishtha, that is devotional service to Lord Krishna, is not acceptable to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In addition, according to the exact regulative principles, one should add the Jiva Danda to the three dandas. The four dandas bound together as one are symbolic of unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. Because the Ekadandi sannyasis of Mayavad school are not devoted to the service of Krishna, they try to merge into the Brahman effulgence, which is a marginal position between the material and spiritual existence. They accept this impersonal position as liberation. Mayavadi sannyasis, not knowing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a tridandi, think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an ekadandi sannyasi. This is due to their vivarta or bewilderment. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no such thing as ekadandi sannyasi. Indeed, the tridandi sannyasi is accepted as symbolic representation of the sannyas order. By citing this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the sannyas order recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mayavadi sannyasis who are enamored by the external energy of the Lord cannot understand the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To date, all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in his footsteps, accept the sannyas order and keep the sacred thread and the tuft of unshaved hair. The Ekadandi sannyasis of Mayavadi school give up the sacred thread and do not keep any tuft of hair. Therefore, they are unable to understand the purport of Tridanda sannyas. And as such, they are not inclined to dedicate their lives to the service of Mukunda. They simply think of merging into the existence of Brahman because of their disgust with the material existence. The acharyas who advocate the Daiva Varnashram, the social order of Chaturvarnyam mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, do not accept the position of Asura Varnashram, which maintains that the social order of Varna is indicated by birth. The more intimate devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, namely Gadadhar Pandit, accepted the Tridanda Sannyas and also accepted Madhava Upadhyay as his Tridandi Sannyasi disciple. It is said that from this Madhava Acharya, the Sampradaya known in Western India as the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya has begun. Sri Gopal Bhatta Vasu, who is known as the Smriti Acharya in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, later accepted the Tridanda Sannyas order from Tridandipad Prabodhananda Saraswati. Although acceptance of Tridanda Sannyas is not distinctly mentioned in Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, the first verse of Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamruta advocates that one should accept the Tridanda Sannyas order by controlling the six forces. Vacho Vegam, Manasakroda Vegam, Jivha Vegam, Udaro Pastha Vegam, Etan Vegan Yo Vishaheta Dhiraha, Sarvam Apimam Prithivim Sashishyat. One who can control the forces of speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue and genitals is known as the Goswami and is competent to accept disciples all over the world. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never accepted the Mayavad order of sannyas and for this they cannot be blamed. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Sridhar Swami, who was a Tridandi sannyasi. But the Mayavadi sannyasis, not understanding Sridhar Swami, sometimes think that Sridhar Swami belonged to the Mayavad Ekadanda Sannyas community. Actually, this was not the case. So actually I was not really feeling qualified to speak on this verse. Not qualified to speak on any verse actually. So would like to seek blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas. Please. Actually this verse is the epitome of sannyas. Sannyasis in our sampradaya have been singing this verse. It's a last verse of the Bhikshu Geet. So it's like Shrunvanti Gayanti Grunanti Sadhava. This is sung, accepted and recited multiple times. And then somebody who is struggling to be even a grahastha is, you know, has to come and give a class. This is actually irony in one sense, or maybe a humor, whatever you want to call it. So I really need your blessings. But then somebody told me that, Prabhuji, please take this verse because the purport is so long that very less time is there for speaking. So without much preparation, you can actually speak like that. So I said, okay, fine. So this purport, actually, when it is read in conjunction with the previous purports, it seems to be a bit out of place. Because there is just so much of information given here about different types of sannyas, different dandas, and different personalities accepting this sannyas. It's sort of overwhelming, actually. So I just thought that, you know, I don't have any realization of this verse on at what point of maturity of realization this verse has come. Just to get a gist of the level of maturity by which, the level of realization by which this verse must have sprung from the heart of Bhikshu. You know, we see that this is the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and Lord Krishna is actually about to wind his pastimes. So in the last time of his existence on this earth, he's speaking to Uddhav. And in that, he remembers a few personalities. We know that when Uddhav met Maitreya Rishi, he met Vidura in the third canto. Uddhav said that actually Krishna was remembering you. When Krishna departed, he was actually remembering you. So, whom do you actually remember in the last part of your life? Somebody who is really very close to your heart. somebody who has touched your heart. Like Lord Krishna, when he would sleep in nice, wonderful decorated beds in Dwarka, in the sleep he would remember gopis. It's in that subconscious state. Why? Because gopis are so dear to him. They have touched his heart. Lord Krishna actually mentioned to them that, you know, the only thing that I have to give you back, just be satisfied. I don't have anything. Just be satisfied with your own good work. So somebody who has touched the heart of Lord Krishna, that person Krishna is able to remember. So he's remembering Vidura also. And another important thing is, if you read third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the third canto begins, there is a transition point. So just before third canto begins in second canto, there is elaborate discussion on the time period, the time factor, and in the creation of the universe, and there's a lot of explanations there. And then suddenly, you know, the Shaunakadi Rishis, they intervene. They say, okay, I mean, we have heard all this. Please tell us now what we have actually come to hear for. So please tell us about the Vidur Maitreya Samvad. So apparently this Vidur Maitreya Samvad was very famous. I mean, if you are a spiritualist, just like, you know, you in today's world, you know, have you read that book of Sasaru Maharaj? People will ask the question. You know, have you read the Japa Reform book? Or have you read this particular book of Radhanath Swami? Or have you read this particular, you know? If you are a spiritualist, you must have read it. So in those times, you know, if you are a spiritualist, you know, have you heard Vidur Maitreya Samvad? Oh, I have not heard. Okay. So then that's the most important thing. So the sages, they say, okay, please speak on Vidur Maitreya Samvad. So what I'm trying to say is that Vidura, very dear to Lord Krishna, and at that time, Vidur Maitreya Samvad was very well known. It was a major, well-known, accepted spiritual discourse. But the prayers of this Bhikshuki are not so known. Nobody is saying that, you know, have you heard the Bhikshu Geet? Have you heard the what Lord Krishna spoke about the Avanti Brahman? Nobody is asking this question. So some Brahman somewhere, he is psychologically undergoing certain expressions. So as Sankirtan Prabhu also told in the Bhagavatam class, Krishna knows what every person is thinking. And whatever this Bhikshu has thought in his mind, you know, he has become so dear to Lord Krishna that Krishna, when he is departing, he is speaking about this pastime. And in fact, he is so dear that the same Krishna, when again appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he takes sannyas, again he is reciting this same Bhikshu Geet and verses. So definitely a person who is extremely, extremely dear or extremely close to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, definitely on a higher level of realization. So that is just the consciousness. So this is the consciousness of this purport. But then there is so much of information also given in this. A lot of information has been given. So I was thinking that, okay, let's try to understand who are these different personalities and what are these different information which Srila Prabhupada is trying to understand, to explain. So recently I actually came across one video. It had gone viral on WhatsApp. And you see in that video, the Shankaracharya, the current Shankaracharya, he is speaking. And there is one devotee, one follower, he raises his hands and asks a question. And he says that when we go to ISKCON, you see, they tell us that your philosophy is all Mayavad and it is not bona fide and things like that. So why is it like this? So he's actually asking that question in that video. And immediately the sannyasi replies. He says that, you know, in ISKCON devotee may be saying so many things, but who is their main founder? Their main founder is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what kind of sannyasi he has accepted? He is a Ekadandi sannyasi. So how can they say that Maya's philosophy is wrong? This is the answer that he gives actually. It's quite interesting. So Srila Prabhupada here, in the first purport, he is trying to make one fact very clear, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepting Ekadanda Sannyas was simply a formality. Right? The actual sannyas which is accepted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the sannyas of, as given in Srimad Bhagavatam. And because immediately after sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was reciting this verse. Actually in here it is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita that after taking sannyas, Mahaprabhu was running towards Vrindavan, but he was in so much ecstasy that he sort of lost his track where he was going. And he just kept wandering in the place called as Radhadesh, around the bank of Ganges, the western bank of Ganges. And there he was just reciting this verse all the time. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu connecting this verse with his sannyas is actually telling us that he is accepting the sannyas as recommended in this verse. And what is recommended in this verse? The two words, very prominent, are Paratmanishtha and Mukundhangri Sevaya. So that is the two words are very important. Complete faith in Supreme Personality of Godhead and service to the Supreme Lord. These are definitely not the part of the Advaita philosophy. Correct? There is no question of service because ultimately there is service, but the goal is to become one with the Lord. But there is no akhanda service. But here there is akhanda service which is being spoken and Paratmanishtha. This verse actually Prabhupada is trying to explain. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling us that the sannyas that he accepted was simply a formality. Right? So then somebody may ask a question. Okay, you know, you are saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Ekadandi sannyas in your sampradaya and that is a formality. But then all of you sannyasis, you are accepting all Tridanda sannyas. Where is this Tridanda sannyas mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam? Because Mahaprabhu accepted Srimad Bhagavatam sannyas and Ekadanda was a formality, then you also do that only. Accepted the standard of Bhagavata and accept Ekadanda sannyas. Where is the historical evidence of this Ekadanda sannyas? Where is it coming from? Has anybody accepted Tridanda sannyas that you are actually accepting? Historically, everybody has been only accepting Ekadanda sannyas. And if you are quoting the example of this Brahman, for him even the Ekadanda was stolen away. Means actually if you read the previous verses, I mean why actually he is accepted as the real sannyasi? Because the people, they would take his danda away. Somebody would take his kamandalu away because they would mock at him. Right? And somebody would take his deer skin away. There are verses which mention this, right? Just before this, in the beginning of this chapter. And somebody would pass foul air on his face. People would ridicule him. They would pass comments on him. So why he is the greatest sannyasi? Because they were able to take away from him the external symbols of sannyas. But despite ridiculing him and criticizing him, they could not take away his determination and commitment to sannyas. He did not become angry at them. He did not scold them. He simply understood that this is coming because of my own karma. And he remained faithful in his path of. So that is actually great. That they could not take away from him his commitment towards sannyas. And therefore he is one of the greatest sannyasis. So the people may ask you, then where is this evidence of Tridanda sannyas? So then Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here that the Tridanda sannyas was also accepted. Giving two examples. One is a contemporary example at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and another is a prehistoric example of Vishnu Swami. So he's explaining that this Vishnu Swami also accepted Tridanda sannyas. So I was a little curious to know what is the story about Vishnu Swami. So it's very nice. And it has a deep connection with our sampradaya also. And therefore, I would just like to speak about it. So, in ISKCON Desiratory, if you go, there is one document there available. It's called the Gaudiya History. And this history actually mentions this short history about Vishnu Swami. And it's quite interesting. And right at the beginning of the document, it mentions that this history, there was a lot of confusion amongst people's mind. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he sort of gave a more established history about many Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas and especially about Vishnu Swami. And that's what is being written in this document. So it's a very great, important contribution of our Acharyas. Of course, the contribution was unlimited. But recording important historical evidences is an extremely important contribution. You may be thinking that how, what I'm talking about, but if you see, I was reading one book actually on Queen of Jhansi. Small book, it's a very nice book. And in that book, the author, he quotes one statement of Lord Macaulay. And Lord Macaulay says, a civilization who is not able to glorify their predecessors. It's a very nice statement. A civilization who is not able to glorify the contribution of their predecessors will have successors who will not find anything to glorify in their predecessors. Are you able to understand? This is Lord Macaulay's statement. And through the entire educational system, if you see, he has made it very sure that you will not find things in your predecessors to glorify them. He will take them away. Therefore, it's an important contribution of anyone who is in the spiritual lineage to be able to quote history properly. And this history of Vishnu Swami is so fantastic. So it's mentioned that Vishnu Swami actually was a son of a great wazir, a great prime minister of a king. And this king was the king of the Pandyan Empire. So the Pandyan Empire is in South India. Right? So one of the major empires that time. Tamil Nadu, Andhra, that part covering the Pandyan Empire. And right from the childhood, Vishnu Swami was trained by his father to defeat Buddhist philosophy. You know, he was trained like that. And as Vishnu Swami grew up, this small boy, so the name of this minister was Deveshwar, and name of this boy was Devatanu. And after he grew up, he accepted sannyas. And he almost became like the main guru or the priest of the entire Pandyan family and the Pandyan kingdom. And when he grew up as a sannyasi, by that time Buddhism had spread so much that the temple of Jagannath Puri and the deities of Lord Jagannath were already completely captured by the Buddhists, and they were worshipped as Buddha and Sangha. That's what this book says. This small article by Saraswati Thakur is mentions. So then Vishnu Swami, he said that, no, this is not proper. So he convinced the king that we have to go and rescue Lord Jagannath. So Vishnu Swami, his father and the king, they all went. They went to Puri, and through some political means or through some debates, or those details are not mentioned, but they rescued the deities of Jagannath from the temple. So they took Lord Jagannath, they put him on a cart and took him to a nearby place called Sundarachal, around 2 miles away from temple, which is today called as the Gundicha temple. And that was the first Rath Yatra, where Lord Jagannath was rescued from the Buddhists and was taken to the Gundicha temple. And because the name of this king was Pandyo Vijaya, therefore that process of Lord Jagannath coming out is known as Pandi Vijaya. It's actually a apabhramsh of that word, Pandyo Vijaya. Right? So you can imagine, if this Pandyan king would not have done this, then we wouldn't have Jagannath now to worship as Lord Jagannath. And you can simply imagine how Krishna consciousness would be so dry without Lord Jagannath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu connection with Lord Jagannath. So it's a very important contribution. So this Vishnu Swami, when he took sannyas, he actually accepted the Tridanda sannyas. He said that we want to surrender to Krishna with body, mind and words. So kayana manasa vacha. So all that surrender, and he accepted Tridandi sannyas. Not only that, he later on initiated 700 disciples who also were Tridandi sannyasis. And then this historical document mentions that the last person in this Tridandi sannyas was some person known as Vyasheshwar. And after Vyasheshwar, again, the Tridandi sannyas idea sort of became faded. It did not, somehow nobody accepted sannyas, although the community remained very well. Vishnu Swami also wrote a very wonderful book called as Sarvajna Sutra, where he actually gave the commentary on the Shuddha Advaita philosophy, which is followed in the Rudra Sampradaya. But then later on, you know, the community existed, but then there were no Tridandi sannyas. So, and Vishnu Swami appeared somewhere in the 200-300 BC. So this is just after Lord Buddha had appeared and Buddhism was spread a lot. So until around 7th to 8th century, around 700 to 800 AD, there was absolutely nothing. And then another wonderful personality appeared in that community. His name was Raj Gopal. And this personality also accepted Tridanda Sannyas. And Raj Gopal then initiated Bilwa Mangal Thakur as his disciple. Now, Bilwa Mangal Thakur was a disciple of this Raj Gopal, who is a Tridandi Sannyasi, which is mentioned. And this Raj Gopal, actually, he traveled all over India. And he re-established the deities of Varadraj temple. And he also established the deities of Ranchodra in Dwarka. These are all the contributions of, and he also took the title as Vishnu Swami. So he's the second Vishnu Swami. After departure of this Vishnu Swami, some problem or a feud took place in that community. And that's what Srila Prabhupada is quoting here actually. So the reason I studied all this is because I was not able to get the references or context of who is this Shiva Swami that Prabhupada is talking about in the purport. So in that community there was one person, his name was Shiva Swami, and because it was Rudra Sampradaya, so worship of Shiva already existed. So many of these people, they were not able to understand the subtle differences between the strong Shaivite monism and the Shuddha Advaita which was preached by Vishnu Swami. And then he sort of became dominant and he just preached everybody that no, ultimately, you know, Lord Shiva is the supreme. And then the real goal is to sort of go towards the Shaivite monism. This happened after the departure of the second Vishnu Swami. And because probably there was nobody there to defend that argument in a very strong way, people started accepting his philosophy. And this man went to the extent that he actually took the Sarvajna Sutra commentary and he made changes to it to fit his philosophy into it. So the whole, everyone, the Sarvajna Sutra was being preached along with the Shaivite monism idea. And you know, that's how Prabhupada says here that the original 108 names of sannyasis which were told by Vishnu Swami and also the 10 names of sannyas accepted by Ekadanda, they both were given by Vishnu Swami. But then this personality who came, Shiva Swami, he rejected the 108 designations of sannyasis of Vaishnav and only retained 10 because they were more, similar to what Shankaracharya was already accepting and following it. So all this interesting history is there. And then again, because of this, there was nothing happening. And in the year 1336, around that time, in 13th to 14th century, another personality appeared, who Prabhupada is citing here as the Madhava Upadhyay. So this personality took, later on, he took initiation from Srila Gadadhar Pandit. And it is this personality who later on also, and then in this he had one disciple of the name Lakshman Bhatta. And this Lakshman Bhatta's son was actually Vallabh Bhatta or Vallabhacharya, who again accepted the Tridandi Sannyas given by this Madhava Upadhyay. And again the Vallabha Sampradaya started from there. And this is how the Vishnu Swami is connected to this entire Vallabha Sampradaya. So then this Vallabhacharya later on again accepted Tridandi Sannyas. And Prabhupada is quoting all these examples here just to tell these people that boss, Tridandi Sannyas has always been there. It is bona fide. It has been accepted in Vaishnava Sampradayas. Therefore, what we are doing is not something wrong. It is absolutely, although it is just a formality, right? But it is still as the verse says, you know, the great rishis of the past, purvatamai, of great, great past rishis also did this, and we are repeating the same thing. So Prabhupada is actually sort of creating these arguments that, you know, we are actually following something which is absolutely bona fide. There's another very important personality which Srila Prabhupada is quoting here to give this example of Tridanda Sannyas. And that is a name mentioned here as Gopal Bhatta Vasu. That's the name mentioned in the purport. So is he same as the Gopal Bhatta Goswami that we know of? And if he's the same Gopal Bhatta Goswami that we know of, then what is this Tridandi Sannyas that he's talking about? Because none of the Goswamis, according to our information, accepted any formal sannyas. So I actually found one research paper in which it is mentioned that why he actually accepted sannyas. So it's very interesting. And the reason why Gopal Bhatta is actually accepting sannyas is exact same reason why even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas. Although there was no formal need of doing it. So, actually once in Vrindavan we were there and Rameshchandra Goswamiji, who is a friend of Radhana Swami Maharaj, visits very often. He told a very interesting thing once. He said that out of all the six Goswamis, the person who was very close to the orthodox Brahmins of Vrindavan was Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Why? Because Gopal Bhatta Goswami never served any Malechha king. But whereas Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, because you know they sort of served Malechhas, people would respect them, right? But they were, so Sanatan Goswami was practically the guru of the entire villagers. People respected him as villagers, but when it came to really accepting, because you can imagine, we are talking about something which is 500 years back. Right? Actually, just giving a small, another historical example to you, that how people were so orthodox even in our country, even at that time. You see, this is mentioned by one historian in his book. Okay? So, and you know, please, nobody should feel offended. It's just there in the book, so I'm repeating it. But it's an interesting piece of information. You know, we all hear about Chanakya in history and how Chanakya used this particular technique of Vishakanya, which is in modern day known as honey trap or something. You heard of this name before? It's called this technique of honey trap. That means if you want to capture a king or you want to make a king surrender, then you make the king, you know, fall in love with some woman. And then through that woman, you track out the information and then you ultimately spoil it. Somehow, despite this intelligent understanding that was there in our country right from beginning, right from the time of Chanakya, and then many kings practiced it, you know, we don't see this technique being actually used against the British authorities. We don't see this technique being used, right? The honey trap and all that. We don't see, you know, any of the kings using this type of techniques. And actually, when the British initially came in the form of East India Company, they didn't even have their wives with them. They just came as male. At some point in time, after the first battle in 1803 with Marathas, after that, their actually wives started coming to India. Till that time, they didn't have. But we don't see this honey trap being followed. Because the orthodoxy of society was so much that even women who belong to that type of society, they would not feel like associating with somebody who is coming from the outside India. So you can imagine the orthodoxness is so strong in our culture even at that time. So how could you accept, how could these Brahmanas who were worshippers of maybe Radha Raman deities or deities in Vrindavan, they couldn't accept Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami wholeheartedly. So they accepted Gopal Bhatta Goswami because he had not served Malechhas. It sounds very funny when you hear it in today's times, but you have to put yourself 500 years back to be able to really appreciate what these things are. And because Gopal Bhatta Goswami was staying close to this community, he could not fully explain the Hari Bhakti Vilas literature which was given by Sanatan Goswami. But Hari Bhakti Vilas explains the Vaishnava etiquettes in great amount of detail. But he would not be able to do it because he was constantly staying with strong smarthas. And he had to stay with them for their benefit. So what would you do in such a situation? If you are not able to wholeheartedly communicate the Vaishnava principles, which are actually higher than the orthodox principles, and be able to influence their heart, what would you do? And that's exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also facing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here to deliver all the people. But he expresses to his associates that, well, I am actually giving this Pipalikhanda medicine, but rather than improving the cough, it is actually increasing the cough. Sometimes I feel that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may be looking at me or struggling with japa, he also may be thinking that, you know, I have already given Pipalikhanda medicine. Last 20 years this person is taking this, but the curve is still increasing, right? But that's our misfortune. But then Mahaprabhu was thinking like this. Means actually he wanted to be able to reach out to everybody, including the orthodox Brahmanas, right? So all the Mayavadis also, the Kutarkik guns, all of them he wanted to. So he said, yes, the only way I can do is if I accept sannyas. When I become sannyasi and I teach a Brahminical principle, I teach a Vaishnava principle, they will not be able to oppose me. Right? And what is the classic example of this in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's history? The classic example is the Subodhi Rai's case. So this Subodhi Rai, you know, he was, somehow it so happened that he was a very well, very great Brahmana. And somehow he was, by crook, converted into the Islamic faith. Right? By crook. It was a very funny reason that some water was sprinkled over him. And immediately he became outcast. Now, this is like too much. So, anyway. But you have to appreciate, you have to go 500 years back to understand this. Right? If you actually study the history, you may say that why all this, you know, conception of not accepting water from somewhere, not accepting food from somewhere, why all these concepts were there? If you actually study, the concept was only up to accepting a daughter from the other family. It was actually limited to only that. That we wouldn't accept, and it was all across. It's not that a Brahman would not accept a daughter from the lower family and Kshatriyas can accept. No, it was not like that. In general, they would not accept. Why? Why is this question? So it's not about casteism. It's not about spreading some achyut and all these types of ideas. You have to understand the reason why they would do like this. The reason is the Varnas in India, they were actually professions. They're actually professions. They're actually skills. When a person is born in the family of, say, a weaver, he's born in the family, his genes are so powerful, that his art of weaving is so powerful, and if you see in India that time, the cloth would be so fine that you could pass an entire sari from within a ring. A sari could pass through a ring. That is the quality of cloth produced by a weaver. How is it possible? How can weaver have such geniuses? Because birth after birth after birth after birth, the garbha is been preserved. The garbha is preserved. And therefore, just so that the garbha is preserved and you reach an excellence of profession, that's why this conception is very important. Because if there is a mix, if a lohar gets married to a weaver and a son is born, let's say. The son is confused, you know, what I'm supposed to be? Am I supposed to be? The lohar has a different type of skill sets. We say ek sunar ki, what is that? So sunar ki ek lohar ki, right? That is a, so lohar means like ek ghav don tukade in Marathi they say, right? And a sonar is like fine work. Now let's say sonar gets married to a lohar. Then the boy is confused. Am I supposed to do ek ghav don tukade or am I supposed to do properly? So just so that the excellence can be preserved, the concept of this not accepting daughter from other family was there. It only had to do with the conservation of the seed, as they call it. That's why now in India also, you know, you go and you buy some rice. You know, you don't know what kind of seed is this. It could be genetically modified. It could be anything. Because it's not, even if you grow organically vegetable, there is no guarantee of the vegetable being organic because the seed can be from a genetically modified place. Because there is no seed preservation. The concept of seed preservation is applicable everywhere. Through all species of life. Including human species. So the seed preservation is so important. When a person is born through this process of seed preservation, he can perform to high level of excellence. Another example is there of a Kshatriya, like this. There was a battle between two Rajputs at one point in time. And the battle was being fought. And this, the king started sort of losing the battle. So the prince went. And the prince was really fighting with such valor and bravery. And all of a sudden what happened is, you know, it's battle, so anything can happen. So somehow the opponent, you know, he cut off his head. This prince, his head got cut. And then that's the beginning of the defeat. So the whole thing was, the army was defeated. But after the head was cut, the prince still continued fighting and killed some 10 more people. So that was like a shock. So and then everyone told to the king, you know, this is what is happening. You know, this prince is born. You know, after his head is cut, he killed 10 more people. So then he said, okay, get that king who is captured. So that is his father of this person who has got killed. So the father was caught. They said, you are defeated, but I am willing to release you, and I am willing to release your kingdom on one condition. He said, you accept a woman from our kingdom as your wife, and you give us a prince like this. He said, you give us a prince like this, then we'll release you. So what did this king say? The king said, sorry, not possible. So why? It's your seed. This son is born. He said, let me tell you a small story about this boy's mother. He said, when this boy was in his cradle, so 1 year old small boy, he was in the cradle. That time it was a day of Ranga Panchami, it was a day of Holi. And the mother was sitting next to the boy, and the boy was looking at the mother. And I suddenly entered there, right? And with lot of love, because it is Ranga Panchami, so you know he was sort of in a romantic mood. So with lot of love, he applied nice color on the face of this wife, like this. This boy who is in the cradle, he saw that it is some sort of a romantic affair between my mother and father, and he moved his neck aside like this. The boy in the cradle moved his neck aside. This is the same prince who died. The mother of this child, when she saw this happening, that the boy has now seen a romantic affair at such a young age, and the samskar which has happened on that child at such a tiny age is not proper, she became very angry. And because she was a queen, she is subordinate to the king, so she couldn't fight with the king. She couldn't argue with the king. She couldn't shout at him also. She just took out a small dagger, which was always with her, and she killed herself. Because she failed to give the right samskar at the right age. So the king said, if you have anybody like this in your kingdom who is a woman like this, then you can bring, then such a child will be born. So this is, I'm just giving an example of the need of seed preservation. Why this existed so much strongly in our culture? Because to have kings like this, to have weavers like this, to have sonars like this, to have singers like this, they start singing. Tansen used to sing. He would sing for 15 minutes and it would start raining. How is this capacity coming? From where is the skill coming? This skill cannot come overnight. Bursts of seed preservation has to undergo. For then that was the purpose why this concept was there. Right? And then later on it became extended towards, you know, not even accepting food, not even accepting water. That was actually it's a deformity. It's a deformation of the process. What is that? Yeah, it's a perversion of the process. Right? So how to stop this perversion of the process? Correct? So in India, what did they do? Okay, so you're all Brahmanas, you're all orthodox, and you're not accepting food from somebody, you're not accepting water from somebody. So what we will do? From outside, we will get a philosophy. It is called the Marxism. We'll get the book called Capital, and we'll study that. We'll bring in the leftist philosophy. Right? Everyone is equal. Nobody. No, there is no need to go outside and get anything from outside. The society is competent to provide a solution when there is a deformity. And the solution is that the sannyasi is supposed to be higher than a brahmana. So therefore, in this case of Subhuti Roy, coming back to our example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what was the solution given to him to come back to the Sanatan Dharma from Islam? What was the solution given to him by brahmanas at that time? Yeah, he has to drink boiling ghee. And then he will die. But because he has drunk this pure cow's desi ghee, he will take the next birth as a brahmana. That was the solution given to him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no need to do anything like this. You go to Vrindavan, serve Vaishnavas. There are Vaishnavas coming from Bengal. You know, they are having hard time having chapati because they don't get rice. So you cook rice for them and give them some curd. And Mahaprabhu, just see, this Subhuti Roy was a saukar, right? He was a saukar person. So Mahaprabhu, so intelligent, he knows what is the mentality of the Subhuti Roy also. Because how can suddenly you can, because if there's so many sannyas, so many Vaishnavas, how can you cook rice for so many people? Not possible, no? You have to first go out and beg for rice. There's no, and he himself doesn't have any profession. So what this person would do, because he had that understanding, this is written in some places about Subodhi Roy, that he would go out to beg alms. And whenever he would get cash, he would deposit that cash to another saukar. And after a year, he would collect the interest on that cash and the cash itself. So that would be a good amount. That amount he would spend on buying rice, and that rice he would give to Vaishnavas. So, you know, his vritti of being saukar also was engaged. Correct. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so expertly engaged him. Right? And such a big and important, wonderful person. Actually, it is mentioned that Subodhi Roy, during that time, he was a very crucial personality of taking this Vrindavan Yatras. A very important factor, a personality who became an instrument in taking devotees throughout the Vrindavan. Such a personality would have actually become a person of Abrahamic faith if it was not for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give that correction at right point in time. He could do that because he was a sannyasi. So the solution that there could be a unnecessary perversion in the Varnashram system, the solution is that a sannyasi can correct it. And if there's a perversion in the sannyasi, then the king can correct it. Because king is the representative of God. So we have examples like that in the history also, where the kings have taken steps. Like the most famous example is the Prithu Maharaj and Indra. So Indra was like a sort of a perverted sannyasi coming. And the Prithu Maharaj had to go and then take action on him. So king can correct. And if king is doing something wrong, then Brahmanas can correct. And the Brahmana doing something wrong, sannyasi can correct. And it's like a cycle. The whole process is self-sustainable. So a devotee told me this. He said that it's like the Ayurvedic medicine. You don't have to take anything from outside to improve it. The body itself has the mechanism to generate the solution to cure the diseases of the body. And that is the Varnashram Paddhati. And it is for that reason that even Gopal Bhatta Goswami, at some point in time later, he felt the need of accepting a Tridandi sannyas. So that he could transfer the Vaishnava principles to all these other personalities who are the staunch authoritative Brahmins. And lastly then, Srila Prabhupada mentions that, okay, you may say this entire Tridanda principle, but in your entire Gaudiya Vaishnavism, where is the description of the Tridanda sannyas? You may say, okay, there are Vaishnavas accepting Tridandi sannyas, but is there any philosophical explanation which says that, okay, this is what the Tridanda sannyas means? And then Prabhupada says that actually the verse of quoted by Srila Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamruta is the philosophy behind the Tridanda sannyas. What is that verse? Vacho vegam, manasak krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udar upastha vegam. Etana vegana yo vishaheta dhiraha. A dhira is a sannyasi. A dhira person is able to control his senses. Who is that person? One who is able to control these six urges. But then why three dandas? What is the connection between the... Is like 6 divided by 2 is equal to 3. Then what is the 2? So it's like... people may get confused. So what is the connection? So yes, the three dandas, as I mentioned, it is the... So vacho vegam, that itself is one separate danda. So one danda is dedicated to only vacha. So you can imagine how important it is. So here on the other side we have like the Udara Upastha Vegam and Jiva Vegam and all that. It's a, like you can say the weighted average in mathematics you have. So higher weight is allotted to one danda, and that weight is Vacho Vegam. It is the highest weight. Because just one whole danda is dedicated only for Vacho Vegam. And then the other two, Manasa Krodha Vegam. So again, Manasa Krodha Vegam, one should not misinterpret it as the anger of the mind. No. Is the vega of the anger and vega of the mind, both. It is not Mana Krodha Vegam, it is Manasa Krodha Vegam. So Manasa is supposed to be a Shashti Vachan of the word Manas. Meaning belonging to mind. So Manasa Vegam and Krodha Vegam, these are two separate vegas. So Krodha Vegam is separate, Manasa Vegam is there, so including everything, your mind, your lust, greed, everything is part of the Manasa Vegam. So Manasa Vegam, Krodha Vegam together is one more danda. And then the jiva vegam, udara vegam, upastha vegam is one more danda. So like that the philosophy is there. So Prabhupada said, this is how we have the three danda sannyas in Vaishnava, given by Srila Rupa Goswami, that my mind is surrendered to you, my vacha is surrendered to you, and my body also is completely surrendered to you. And that is the Tridanda Sannyas, and that is what being spoken in this verse. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That's all I wanted to explain. Anybody has any questions or comments? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Information कुछ नहीं है ना, वो तो मैं information